And apparently they don't think. Okay, well, continue.
But more recently, we haven't faked them out with appearances, live appearances, but they have picked up a lot of press releases. So, for example, we were working with a group called U.S. Uncut, who put out a release about General Electric giving back their tax credit that they received last year. That was, of course, fake, but it was reported as real. And we have another case not so long ago where the U.S. Chamber of Commerce announced that they were going to get behind climate legislation that was going through Congress. And that was Andy again behind the podium. But the press release itself was covered by Fox News. It was read out, as if it was real. So there's newscasters who have been fooled, but not necessarily. We haven't been invited on TV very much.
What's the reasoning behind using a completely made-up name as opposed to, say, someone who would actually exist within the organization? Are there legal ramifications, or is it just that it's hard because they can't verify that the person exists? That
it's a Google thing. It's just technical.
So if they don't really exist, then it's harder for them to find any real information about the person.
Yeah, and also it's not legal concern, but it's maybe ethical. Like, mm-hmm. who cares about this person? Unless they're a really high-profile person, it would be great to impersonate them, but then everybody would know what they look like, so right. That wouldn't work very well. But yeah, it's more just that the people in the corporation aren't really our targets. We're not saying anybody's evil who works mm-hmm. in a corporation, or even the CEO isn't evil necessarily. It's just it's the actual system that is evil. It's not even the one corporation, it's not – evil's the wrong word. but there's this big system that benefits the very wealthy, and it's engineered that way. It's very carefully constructed to do that at the expense of everybody else, and that's really what we're trying to say with all of our actions. It's not that there are any bad apples or that certain people are psychopathic, although they are. It's that there's this entire system, so we wouldn't – we wouldn't take names and impersonate people generally for that reason.
We're here with Andy and Mike of the Yes Men, showing us all kinds of interesting techniques, philosophies, experiences, things like that. And we're offering the Yes Men package, two of their DVDs, two of the films that have come out over the past few years, showing these particular, adventures in social justice, which is presented through comedy, it's presented through social engineering, but it is effective in getting the message out, and you'll see how it's done and the reactions and all that kind of thing. You'll get two autographed DVDs and a fake newspaper that they also put out and handed out to unsuspecting commuters at various rush hours. That's for a pledge of $75. It's an amazing deal. Only good till 9 p.m. tonight. 212-209-2950. We have three calls on the line. Over $1,000 so far, which is great. Please keep those calls coming in. Again, we can only offer this for a very brief time. 212-209-2950. What I'd like to do is play a little bit more from the Yes Men Fix the World. This is basically more about what we were just talking about with fooling BBC World into getting on the air and speaking before 300 million people, which, I don't know how. That was you, Andy, right? Being on TV in front of 300 million people, how did that feel live, right?
Well, it was in a broom closet, so it felt okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. If they had all been there, it would have been really awkward.
And it wasn't in BBC studios.
It was, but it was in the Paris studio.
You didn't go to London, though. You went to neutral territory.
Well, I lived in Paris at the time, so it was natural, but also it was lucky because it was a broom closet and there was one technician there and there was no ID checking or anything.
All right, let's listen to how this unfolded. This is an excerpt from the Yes Men Fix the World. It's yours along with the Yes Men, the other film, and the fake newspaper for a pledge of $75, 212-209-2950. And for an additional $50, you get a full archive of Off the Hook, every show we've ever done from 1988 until 2011. 212-209-2950. Let's hear the Yes Men Fix the World.
Back at home,
you had new mail.
We had mail. Turned out, our Dow site was the gift that kept on giving. This time, it wasn't a mere conference. We'd hit the jackpot. The BBC, perhaps the world's most respected news organization, was doing a big broadcast about Bhopal, and they wanted to know whether Dow might finally clean up their mess. The interview, they said, would be broadcast to 300 million people. This was what we'd been waiting for. To the BBC's great surprise, Dow emailed back to say they would be delighted to speak publicly about the catastrophe. As for us, 300 million people was about a million times bigger than any other audience we'd ever had. We were scared. So we asked the BBC if instead of coming to their headquarters in London, we could meet them in neutral territory, the original land of revolution.
Are you a little nervous?
I'm so nervous. Oh, God. It's like going to the guillotine. I think it's right near where they used to have the guillotine, too, in Paris. The office. Yeah, I think it's the biggest thing we've ever done. This. I haven't combed my hair in like 20 years, yeah. Really. Like, I think I used to do it this way.
Alright.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
When we acquired Union Carbide 3 years ago, we knew what we were getting, and today we are prepared to do the obvious.
Let's see. Don't film too much when we get there, I think.
Hi. Bonjour.
And you're watching BBC World, our main headlines. The world's worst industrial accident is being remembered in India today. It's 20 years since deadly gas leaked from the Union Carbide chemical plant in the city of Bhopal.
At least 18,000 deaths are attributed to the leak, and many local people say the contamination has never been properly cleared up.
Yeah. Should I typically just look right into the camera? Okay.
The factory still exists here, and that's been a real problem for the people living here locally. I mean, there's a site, I've been to it. And it's full of toxic waste. People who are living in these houses, they've all got a story to tell about that day 20 years ago. Many of them lost members of their family, and they say that they're continuing to suffer because of the tragedy. And they're saying somebody needs to answer for this. Legally, what they're saying is that they want to pursue the company to try and clean up the site, but whether the company will accept liability seems doubtful.
Well, joining us live from Paris now is Jude Finisterre. He's a spokesman for Dow Chemicals, which took over Union Carbide. Good morning to you. A day of commemoration in Bhopal. Do you now accept responsibility for what happened?
Steve, yes. Today is a great day for all of us at Dow, and I think for millions of people around the world as well. It's 20 years since the disaster, and today I'm very, very happy to announce that for the first time, Dow is accepting full responsibility for the Bhopal catastrophe. We have a $12 billion plan to finally, at long last, fully compensate the victims, including the 120,000 who may need medical care for their entire lives, and to fully and swiftly remediate the Bhopal plant site. Now, when we acquired Union Carbide 3 years ago, we knew what we were getting, and it's worth $12 billion. $12 billion. We have resolved to liquidate Union Carbide, this nightmare for the world and this headache for Dow, and use the $12 billion to adequately compensate the victims.
Jude, that's good news that you have finally accepted responsibility. Some people would say too late. It's 3 years, yes. You know, almost 4 years on.
When we acquired Union Carbide, we did settle their liabilities in the United States immediately. And we are now, 3 years later, prepared to do the same in India. We should have done it 3 years ago. We are doing it now. And I would also like to say that this is no small matter, Steve. This is the first time in history that a publicly owned company of anything near the size of Dow has performed an action which is significantly against its bottom line simply because it's the right thing to do. And our shareholders may take a bit of a hit, Steve, but I think that if they're anything like me, they will be ecstatic to be part of such a historic occasion of doing right by those that we've wronged.
Just to reiterate what Jude Finisterra, the spokesman for Dow Chemicals, has just said, he says Dow Chemicals now fully accept responsibility for the events in Bhopal.
Great. That's it?
Well done.
Great. Now they wanted
now you do
radio. I can tell you one thing. We're not going out of business. We will continue to make profit. We will simply make slightly less profit than normal. But we are doing the right thing. We're comparing here, though, the value of money to the value of human life, and there is no comparison.
It's a good thing to announce. For once, it's a good thing.
Exactly. I mean, how often does Dow get to, yeah. You know? I wouldn't want to be a Dow spokesperson otherwise.
Oh, you know, this might be the best hack I've ever heard or seen. And Andy, I just cannot express enough how in awe I am of what you pulled off there in front of BBC world audience, 300 million people impersonating Dow Chemical, taking responsibility for Bhopal. What happened after that? How long did it take? And first of all, let me just say that by calling 212-209-2950, pledging $75, you'll get that film plus another film plus a newspaper that was created by the Yes Men, all autographed and sent to you. 212-209-2950. It's utterly awesome and incredible. But so when did they start to realize that they'd been punked?
We got a call about half an hour later from the BBC. I went back to my apartment, got this call, and I tried to talk them. I tried to do the social engineering thing and say, well, you know, the Union Carbide, they were saying, had not, you know, they had reached Union Carbide headquarters and they had said there was no such person. And I said, well, of course not. We have just liquidated Union Carbide. And so it did not work.
No?
No. I think they did laugh.
It didn't have to work at that point.
No,
though, did
no,
it?
There was no reason for it to work. These things aren't meant to really fool people for very long.
How angry were they when they found out that they just made fools of themselves in front of the entire world?
They were British. They were very gracious about it. They invited us back into the studio that evening.
Their studio in London?
Studio.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. Different right. show, but same studio.
Wow. Now, I imagine Dow Chemical probably made a few furious phone calls when they got wind of what was going out over global airwaves.
Yeah, I don't think they were too happy. They were probably not British about it.
No. And what did they say? They must have said something to you in some form.
No.
No, really?
No. They barely said anything to anybody. They wrote this little, very terse little statement that's in the movie. You'll see there where they just deny it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you've already given them this incredible public relations coup where they can take responsibility, do the right thing, help people out, accept responsibility, and they have to go and say, no, we're not going to do any of that. How do you say that gracefully without looking like really evil people?
Well, you don't. I mean, they had a prepared statement. They probably, you know, probably they'd prepared it years before.
Uh-huh.
But it was, you know, two lines and they just read it and that's all they could do. I mean, I think they should have just run with it. You know, said, okay, yeah, what's it to us? Sure, we'll compensate the survivors.
Liquidate a $12 billion company.
Yeah, whatever.
That would be the hack of the world for sure.
Yeah. All history. No, their response, their actual response was so disappointing that we had to actually do one much better for them. So we very quickly wrote a press release on their behalf, attacking us, denying the hoax, saying how terrible we were, and saying all the many, many things they wouldn't do. Like they would not compensate the Bhopalis, their share price would not go down, therefore they would not clean up the site, they would not do all these things.
And was that picked up by the media as well?
Yeah, that was. And we still get people occasionally today who say, wow, you really got Dow to react.
Mike, what are your recollections of this?
Well, I no longer have any recollections. I've just been listening to Andy talk about it, and I was like, yeah, that must be what happened.
on.
Wow.
Hey, guys.
Yes, Bernie.
I had one of the best, world's greatest hacks I've ever heard, but I've heard it before, of course, but it's last night I was listening to BBC World Service, and they are commemorating the 80th anniversary of the BBC World Service, and they were playing some of the most noteworthy moments in BBC World's history of reporting, but they didn't play that, and I think that was a glaring omission, and they really should have, because that stuck in my mind probably as much as anything that BBC World Service has ever reported.
It was aired once, right? They didn't repeat it.
No.
All right, but
No. They immediately lost the tape afterward.
Uh-huh. Well, I think Anonymous has the tape, so.
I'm not kidding either. We looked into, you know, getting the best quality copy that we could to put in our movie, and they said that the tape no longer exists, but they couldn't find it in their archives, which is, of course, total bull. It disappeared because they are embarrassed about it. But I just want to point out that it wasn't their fault. I mean, they were actually just trying to get somebody to speak. They were trying to get a Dow representative to speak, and if there are people out there who will agree to be Dow representatives, then there's nothing that they could do to inoculate themselves against that, really. So it wasn't really their fault. I mean, you know.
Well, they did contact a website that wasn't a Dow website, correct?
Minor detail, Manuel. Minor detail.
All right. Well, now, what other news agencies have fallen for your antics over the years?
Well, the thing that Mike mentioned when we issued a press release for General Electric last year, they paid no taxes. That was a big story for a while.
Yes,
And we issued a press release, or U.S. Uncut actually issued a press release with a little bit of help from us, announcing that they would actually pay the proper amount in taxes that they were not paying, and the USA Today published that. They were the first ones to jump at that.
Interesting.
Yeah, online. So that got a lot of other journalists laughing at them.
So I'm on your off the hook, I think, is on your distribution list, and we get these press releases saying like, "Hey, we're General Electric. We're gonna pay all our taxes." And I, as soon as I see it, I say, "Oh, that's the Yes Men doing one of our things," because there's no way GE would do that.
Right.
You would think USA Today would be at least as smart as I am. It's really strange that they're not.
Really, you think that? I wouldn't.
I would hope that they would be. You know, I'm not that bright, so it's not a high bar.
I don't know.
Well, yeah. This is something we all would hope for, but as we've criticized on the show time and time again, the media, in many cases, has turned into this giant echo chamber where they simply regurgitate various press releases that have been thrown at them without doing too much research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you look around enough, a lot of times you can actually find a news story and actually trace the origin of the press release in which it came from, but in this case they were just following the same pattern, apparently.
Yeah, well, back when I was in college, and I think the statute of limitations has run out on this, I was involved in circulating some fake information through various mischief makers late at night. We'd post memos up on walls and change policy. One thing we did was we instituted a curfew for students at 11 p.m. Just to provoke some outrage. And we said this is a throwback to the 1968 statute, and we quoted the statute and all that. It turned into a big story. The newspapers, the president's office, they all had to put out releases saying, no, we're not doing this. We're not reverting back to this statute of 1968. And what they didn't check was that there was no statute in 1968. So we basically rewrote history and introduced a statute back then just by something they weren't going to check. Have you guys ever been able to do that, to actually rewrite history? And you have to tell us exactly what you rewrote. We'll read about it someday. But is it possible to just go back and change a little slight detail so that, you know, maybe Roosevelt had an extra term or something?
That would be great.
Well, I don't know. People are very believing about these sorts of things. I don't really care too much about the statute of limitations, but I've done some culture jamming stuff in the past, put out press various documents for organizations on their behalf, such as for the MTA. We talk.
It helps them out, yeah.
Yeah, it does. And people look at this, and they actually will believe it, even though it's the most absurd thing you've ever seen. And they'll actually, it takes a lot of brain power. They look at it, and they think, they for a second they think this is real, and then they think, wait, would they really say this? Some more seconds go by, maybe half a minute, and they're like, no, I'm not, and they're still not sure. They have to ask, someone else has to confirm, I don't think
but
so.
At least they're thinking, you know, they're starting to think.
Right? Well, you know, if something looks official, then, you know, people tend to think that it is. I mean, that's why you can get away with, you know, putting on construction workers' outfits and suddenly being in places you're not supposed to. It's just, if it seems like it fits, if it seems like it's supposed to be there, people don't usually think twice about it. And that's just, you know, part of our culture, I guess, that you don't look to. Why would someone go through the effort to you know, make a fake press release or make
exactly.
a fake or, you know, put on a suit and go talk at a conference when they're not supposed to be there? Why would anyone do that? And then when it happens, you know, people are somehow surprised.
Yep, but Red Hat, a 3-foot golden phallus, like, that has to set off, which not a 3-foot golden phallus, a 3-foot golden phallus, which is used for delivering electric shocks to your workers remotely.
But it wasn't, they didn't walk into the conference like that. You put it underneath your suit, and then it just all of a sudden came out on stage.
Yeah, it's human nature to believe. It's not that they're stupid.
But what we learn in social engineering, people want to trust you. You call somebody on the phone and say you're trying to help them, they will give you all the information, and they want to be your friend. They want to have somebody they can confide in.
Yeah, we're all wired that way. It's either we want a friend or we just want to believe what's going on the stage. That's why we can enjoy films and plays. It's a good thing we have this capacity to be fooled. We fool ourselves all the time, constantly. And I know I'm one of the most gullible people I know. I'll believe anything you tell me something, and I'll believe it at least for a while, for a second. You know, I might think about it for 30 seconds and get it, but I really enjoy believing things that aren't true. And yeah, I think it's fun.
Yeah, and it all goes back to that point of you put on the suit, you get the haircut, and you go there, and people accept that you are who you say you are, because it's all about the context, and people are just so willing to accept things in the context they're presented versus doing the little bit of extra research, the 2 minutes of Googling or what have you to check the claims that are being presented.
But 2 minutes is so long. And one thing we're forgetting here when we're talking about press releases is that this isn't because reporters are stupid. Or they're not paying attention, or they're you know, they're easily fooled. They actually don't have time. The market pressure in the way the press has turned so capitalist lately, it's like the bottom line is the bottom line, and they don't have time. They have to get the scoop. That's how they make their money.
You mentioned the golden phallus, and we've talked about some of the other stunts and like how it's integrated into a talk. Once you get the venue and you've kind of got an idea of where you want to go, can you describe a little bit of the like creative process for the story, like how you come up with the suit or this kind of gag or the golden skeleton? Because it looks like you guys have a lot of fun with it. I'm just interested in what those brainstorming sessions are like and how you develop the ideas.
Mike's been quiet for a while. Hello,
Mike? It's kind of getting late here. I might actually fall asleep.
Oh, yeah, it's like 3 in the morning. Never mind. What happens is, how do we come up with stories? How do we come up with our stupid pranks?
That's usually we steal them. We like hack somebody's computer and look for an idea.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where the skill comes in.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is we don't even know how to do that.
We try for a security company like Stratfor because they're very creative, those guys.
Yeah.
They have some really creative ideas.
I just want to step in here and urge people to call in. We're getting a couple of calls. We need some more. 212-209-2950. The Yes Men are here. They very graciously offered their two films and their newspaper, one of their newspapers, and autographed for anybody who calls in and pledges $75. 212-209-2950. Keeping WBAI on the radio so that we can talk about this and all kinds of other mischievous pranks that actually have social relevance. Please support us. Please keep us going. 212-209-2950. We also have an Off the Hook archive for an additional $50. 212-209-2950. We have 3 calls on the line. Let's make that 7. We can do it. There's enough people down there to support this. 212-209-2950. Rob,
I'd like to talk a bit about the whole angle of wrapping your activism up in jokes and gags and these wonderful creative things, because we've seen that with you guys. We've seen that now with things done under the banner of Anonymous and all this other stuff, where it seems even touches of it in Occupy Wall Street and things like that going on now, mm-hmm. where the activism that really resonates is the stuff that makes you laugh. The stuff with a bit of absurdity laced into it. And what do you think it is about that versus just, you know, marching up and down the street with a sign and shouting that that really sort of sticks in people's minds?
A couple things. I think one reason it works is just technical. Like, journalists need something to write about. They can't just write about people walking up and down the street. They can, but it's not enough. You know, they're editors are asking for more. So if you give them something, well, you can give them smashed windows, they'll write about that, but people don't necessarily like that very much. It doesn't really work public relations-wise so well. So if you give them something really funny and silly to write about, that might be enough. So that's one thing, and plus people just like to laugh. And if you do funny things, people laugh at them, and then they like you. People like things that they laugh at. It cuts through a lot of the, you know, people might have mental walls up against certain things, and if you can make a really incisive joke about it that's not at their expense but, you know, with them, and they can see that there is a joke there, that's the beginning of kind of breaking through and convincing them there's another way to see things.
Now, are you ever worried about the legal ramifications? Like, if I was standing up on stage representing Dow Chemical and I actually had never been inside their building, I'd be worried that they might, come after me with some kind of defamation of character or impersonating somebody or anything like that. Does that ever worry you?
Yeah, we've been worried.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's the extent of it?
No. We start when we first did it, the first time we decided to accept an invitation to a conference and go as the World Trade Organization, we were terrified. It was in Austria, for one thing, which has a really weird history if you look at it 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. And plus, you know, we just didn't know. We thought this was just universally a terrible crime to impersonate somebody and speak to people as somebody you're not. But it turns out that it isn't. Unless they're a police officer and you're trying to arrest somebody as a police officer, that's not good. But going as a representative of a corporation or even a government agency, it seems to be okay. As long as you're making a point with it and you have a point, it seems to be protected under at least U.S. law and apparently European law.
Well, it's also because the satire is always revealed at some stage so that you are able to say, okay, this is basically what we were doing, what we were saying.
Yeah.
But has there ever been a case where it wasn't revealed and you're still going on to this day and you've changed policy of a company?
No.
No? But that's the hope, right? Well,
not really. No, I mean, our hope really isn't to change any company's policy, in fact. It's to change public opinion. It's to appeal to people to see there's this big systemic problem we've got that we've got to change. We've got to change the rules of the game. It doesn't even matter whether the company changes. If we don't change the rules of the game, it's totally unimportant. So that's who we're really trying to appeal to. And that's why it's in the nature of it, but these things don't remain believed for very long. It's like an hour or two, and then it's revealed, and that's what we want.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. We're speaking with Andy Bichelbaum and Mike Bonanno of the Yes Men here on WBAI. Now, Mike, I know it's about, 1:30 in the morning over there in Scotland?
1:36, according to my clock.
Okay, well, you're probably pretty tired. I'm giving you the option to disconnect before we go off the air at 9 o'clock if that's what you want to do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been great talking to you, I hope lots of people are pledging to the great radio station WBAI and your program, which is awesome, and I hope we come back on and see you again in the near future.
Well, we're all looking forward to Hope, where you guys are going to keynote.
Yes. Yeah, that'll be fun. It's been such an amazing couple of years seeing what the sort of seeds of hope, and I think you know, your legacy and the legacy of so many kind of people who are engaged in the phone freaking and hacking movement over the years. I think now, hacking has really come into a sort of place of maturity that's really amazing and exciting. So I'm totally stoked to come to Hope and, you know, talk with people. So looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks. Thanks so much for joining us, Mike. And good night to you over there in Scotland. And we'll see you soon.
Yeah.
All right. That was Mike Bonanno from the Yes Men. Andy Bickelbaum remains with us in the studio. And yes, as we mentioned, they will be keynoting at the Hope Conference. More information on that, www.hope.net. For now, though, we still have the Yes Men package of a couple of DVDs and newspaper autograph for a pledge of $75, 212-209-2950. We also have the Off the Hook archive for an additional 50. We also have the Hackerspace package, which we mentioned earlier, for 75. 212-209-2950. These Yes Men premium show are amazing. They're flying off the shelves. I see calls coming in. And again, we only have this available until 9 o'clock. We absolutely cannot offer it beyond that. It just gets a little crazy. 212-209-2950. I believe we have people to thank. Who wants to start, Mike?
Yeah, we want to thank, Jacqueline, who's from, New Brunswick, New Jersey.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
And Jacob from Chatham, New Jersey.
We'd like to thank Michael from Darien, Connecticut.
Janet from White Plains, New York. And Abby from Brooklyn, New York.
And we also want to thank Pamela from Danbury, Connecticut.
Danbury. Okay. And we want to thank Scott from Azusa, California.
All right. I want to thank the people who are calling in right now, but please keep those calls coming because your calls are what make the difference. That's why we're on the air right now. That's why we're talking about this. That's why we're able to spread all of this around. You know, communications are just so important. 212-209-2950. Dot red.
And I also just like to thank everyone who has called, whether you asked to be spoken of and we didn't get a chance to read about you, or if you wanted to keep private, you know. Even if we're not saying your name, we are thankful for every single call that we get.
All right. I'd like to play one more clip. And this is something that actually isn't in the film. It's an intro to the film, The Yes Men Fix the World, that's online. It's more or less kind of a campaign involving an organization known as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And I think I'd just like for it to speak for itself, and we can discuss it in just a little bit. But there is a good example here of what happens when you get caught. and that does happen sometimes, right, Andy? Does happen.
Yes.
How you deal with that. And we talk about this when we're dealing with social engineering quite a bit. Having graceful ways out of things and just humorous ways out of things. So let's listen to this intro to The Yes Men Fix the World, which you can get a copy of. 212-209-2950, pledge of $75. That and one other film, plus the fake newspaper, all autographed. 212-209-2950. Let's listen.
Back in September, we were working with a bunch of climate change activists to plan an event in Washington, D.C. We wanted to make a political point about an organization that's pulling off some of the world's biggest hoaxes. No, not this organization. The one across the street. The one that looks like a U.S. government office, but really is working against the government. In reality, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is a large corporation that is reported to lie to the public on behalf of even bigger corporations. They spend nearly $500,000 a day trying to convince the U.S. government to do really stupid shit, like killing environmental regulations and undermining workers' rights. But since they spend so much money on their hoaxes, many people believe them.
And as it says, American free enterprise dream big, but their dreams are our nightmares because their plans are to prevent us from passing climate change legislation, which means we're screwed.
Since the chamber was hoaxing us all and threatening our survival, we decided to fight fire with fire. We would reveal one of their biggest lies by masquerading as them. We would hold a press conference as the chamber at the National Press Club, but first, we sent out a parody press release from them. It was sort of like their normal ones, except ours was sane. How would the world react to the chamber suddenly reversing its position on climate change?
But a reversal on climate change from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It will reverse its position on the climate change bill and wants a carbon tax, if you will. All right, so the U.S. Chamber is denying it now. All right, so maybe not. Apparently it was a hoax. Either there is a group or some people or a person.
Is there any involvement of the White House whatsoever? I couldn't even begin to go there, Larry, on that one.
Today, the country's largest business lobby, the Chamber of Commerce, got punked. Began early this morning when a press release went out, purportedly from the United States Chamber of Commerce. Amazingly, the release said that the chamber would now support this legislation that it spent months fighting against. Reporters were surprised and probably confused at this odd turn of events, but that was nothing compared to what actually happened at the press conference when it was held later on this morning. Watch this tape.
Clean coal is a technology that has not only not been proven, it basically doesn't exist.
Okay, this is, I'm Eric Wolfschlegel. I'm with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. This is not an official U.S. Chamber of Commerce event. So I don't know what pretenses you're here. I know some of you in the press world, but this is a fraudulent press activity and a stunt.
Who are you really, sir?
And do you have a business card? Are you with the U.S. Chamber?
I do. We can discuss afterwards.
Okay. Can I see your business card?
Can I see yours?
Are you here representing the U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I work there, and you do not look familiar to me at all.
Could I see your business card?
Is this a stunt?
Could I see your business
card?
Is this a stunt? Are you interrupting the president?
Yes, I am. And this guy does not represent the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Can we finish the
okay?
interview?
No. This is not an official Chamber of Commerce. This is not... What is your position at the Chamber of Commerce?
I just spoke my position.
We've got working.
What is your title and your official title at the U.S. Chamber?
I'm the assistant to Mr. Donahue.
Okay. This guy is a fraud. He's lying. This is, you know, a stunt that I've never seen before. So if you'd like to actually talk to the legitimate Chamber of Commerce, I've got my business cards outside. This gentleman, I will assure you, does not have any business cards, and he's not legitimate.
Show me your business card. No, show me yours. No, show me yours.
They both look like imposters. What?
It's just, you got a business card?
It's so weird, though.
But you don't look familiar.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce says it was victimized.
Victims of a hoax by environmental activists.
They said public relations hoaxes undermine the genuine effort to find solutions on the challenge of climate change.
A hoax actually led to the chamber admitting that there is a challenge for climate change. It seems like a good first step. So next up, hoaxes about poverty, violence,
education.
Hunger.
The big education hoax. We've got a big education hoax in this country.
The hoax is a good first step. Yeah.
So that's the story, folks. Not entirely. Then they decided to use this opportunity to raise funds. Mm-hmm. They put out Google ads. You'd click on that, and it would take you to a page from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce asking you to give them $250 to help defend themselves against us. It gets even funnier. They not only use this opportunity to fundraise, but then, they decided to sue us. And, by the way, we're being defended by some of the best lawyers in the world. We're being defended by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Go to EFF.org to check them out. So wait, there's another punchline. Not only did Fox pick up our release, not only did Wolfschlegel come and interrupt our press conference, not only did the Chamber of Commerce try to raise funds off this event, and not only did
they sue us,
not only did they sue us, but they actually changed their policy 2 weeks later.
Just today, the Chamber of Commerce changed positions, not courtesy of the yes men with that stunt in Washington a few weeks ago. But they're now saying, surprisingly to me, and I'm glad about it, that they want to get legislation, and they're now working with the sponsors of the bill.
Gore saying it didn't happen because of the Yes Men is kind of the highest compliment we've ever been paid, I think. So if you're interested in people maintaining their freedom of speech, EFF.org is a very good organization to support. And also, if you're interested in basically more mayhem of this sort, please do go and see theyesmen.org/lab. That is theyesmen.org/lab, where you can find out about the Yes Lab. The Yes Lab is a thing we've launched to try to make this happen a lot more. Pass this film around to other people, because the U.S. Chamber of Commerce wants people not to see it. Yeah, that's reason enough as far as we're concerned.
The Chamber of Commerce needs the support of every American who gives a damn about free markets, private property, and fears creeping fascism. This country cannot afford for the insurance industry to cave. This country cannot afford for the Chamber of Commerce to cave. The Chamber of Commerce has been screwed.
Oh, brilliant. I can't believe Rush Limbaugh is on our airwaves. U.S. Chamber of Commerce may not want you to see this movie, but you can simply by calling 212-209-2950, pledging $75. You'll get the Yes Men Fix the World. You'll get the first Yes Men movie, and you'll get one of their fake newspapers all autographed. Pledge of $75, 212-209-2950, but only for about another 10 minutes or so. And then we are no longer offering that deal. 212-209-2950. Andy from the Yes Men is here with us right now in the studio. And I never heard of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce before. I have no idea who these people are, but they sound scary. Are they still after you? Are they still telling people not to see the film? Or
no idea. We haven't heard from them in about 2 years. They sued us and then promptly disappeared, which seems kind of rude.
Yeah, usually they stick around for one thing or another. Yeah, but they were just bent out of shape because you impersonated them at the and showed that in the movie. They didn't like that.
It's not in the movie. Okay. Yeah, no, it's just there.
Really?
But no, they sued us because I think they were hurt. You know, it was personal. Obviously, it was personal. You heard that guy.
Yeah.
He had a lot of hurt in his voice. It and sounded I think that they're angry. Yeah, they're angry.
Very interesting.
It's
okay.
Well, they're actually involved in all sorts of distasteful things. They actually were very much a part of the whole SOPA thing that was going on a while back.
I'm so not surprised. And I also find it amazing that we keep hooking up with the same basic good guys and bad guys. You know, MPAA on one side, Electronic Frontier Foundation on the other. And, of course, they're helping you guys out. And we just keep, like, meeting each other. It's like some crazy adventure where we just keep reuniting at some point.
It's like dodgeball, where you have one people on one side of the line, another group of people on the other side of the line. It's just the same people.
But one side has a ball and one side doesn't.
We don't talk about these things.
Right. You know, it's interesting, too, because they themselves are in a way sort of impersonating. I mean, they sound like a government organization. When you hear the name U.S. Chamber of Commerce, you think, you know, well, a chamber, that's usually something that occurs in, say, you know, the Senate or the... So in a way, that they're almost imposters themselves. I didn't realize it was a lobbyist group. I always just thought of it as though it's some other branch of the government.
Well, let me just say right now that I still think it's possible that Mike and Andy are, this is an elaborate hoax, that they don't actually exist and that they're suing them as part of the hoax, and that, you know, one day, a few years from now, we'll find that out, because it just seems kind of absurd. Who are U.S. Chamber of Commerce? Really? We need these people? It just seems so evil.
Yeah, I don't know much about their history, but I know that now they do have a budget of about $450,000 a day.
I was going to say, that seems rather low for something so evil, but per day, okay.
Yeah, a day.
What do they do?
They lie to the government. They produce...
But the government can lie all by itself.
Yeah, but it helps if you get a lot of people lying at it. You know, all those senators and congressmen, they need something to do, so...
How did that one work? How did you get to host the U.S. Chamber of Commerce a talk?
Well, we worked with a lot of really smart people. The Avaaz Climate Action, Action Factory people, they were in D.C., group of them wanting to go after the chamber because they knew, unlike us, that the chamber was this really nasty business lobby. That was fighting climate legislation at the time. And as you mentioned, they've fought everything else. They fight against labor rights, against health care, against anything that cuts into corporate interests, because that's their clients, is big corporations. Mm-hmm. So they had this idea to host a press conference as the Chamber of Commerce and announce that we were going to do the right thing, that we were actually going to stop fighting this lame climate legislation, and instead we were going to make this lame climate legislation stronger and actually do something. This was the Waxman-Markey bill in the House, and so we did that. We rented a space at the National Press Club, sent out a press advisory, got some journalists there, and made this announcement. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that complicated. It was just actually doing it.
And who invited the guy from the real U.S. Chamber of Commerce?
Well, that was a funny error. Our press advisory said, Chamber of Commerce is having a press conference at the National Press Club, which is odd, but you know, the National Press Club is the premier place to have press conferences, but it's not where the U.S. Chamber of Commerce would normally have it. They would usually have it in their palatial building that has plenty of press rooms. Uh-huh. They don't need to rent one at the press club. So this reporter didn't even read that it was at the National Press Club, just went straight to the Chamber of Commerce, showed up and said, where's the press conference? And they said, what? And then got in a taxi. And right at the end of our talk and answering some questions, barged in. It was just perfect.
It sounded also, though, like some of the reporters were defending you in terms of trying to get the actual representative to go away or
yeah. Were those reporters or were those cohorts?
Well, yeah. Some of those reporters were not reporters.
Okay. How many actual reporters showed up?
There were some. There were about half of them were reporters. So maybe about five or six of the, I don't know, maybe there were 15 total reporters in quotes, and of which maybe, I don't know, half were real.
Uh-huh.
Well, this whole kind of scenario that played out at the end of the press conference might actually fit into the whole charade that they're trying to create, that they're impersonating someone. Because how many times have you seen various news clips and so on, activists jump in a press conference and try to like cause a ruckus for whoever's speaking on behalf of whatever large organization? Mm-hmm. So if someone comes and starts trying to say, hey, you know, other people are going to want to give, you know, the person up on the podium a chance. He is, after all, on the podium.
Although usually the activist isn't going there trying to keep the current position of that group. So,
Now, yeah. What happened afterwards when you guys met outside in the hallway? Was there any kind of...
He had gone by then.
Oh, he didn't stick around.
No, but it was just tremendous that he showed up. I mean, we did not plan that, and we should have. We should, if we ever do it again, we'll definitely plan it. We'll tip off the target, and we'll leak it to them that it's happening so they show up. Because that was gold. I mean, if we hadn't had that, we maybe would have gotten a day of press. You know, there would have been definitely a ton of print and some TV. But because of that and the amazing footage that we got, which we immediately shared with the networks, we got an extra day and a half of, like, really mainstream, you know, NBC, CNN, not Fox, covering it.
And then they changed their position?
Yeah, they actually did change their position 2 weeks later. And that was Al Gore on the Charlie Rose Show talking about that. And I don't think it was because of the Yes Men and our stunt. It was because of the hard work of a lot of activists just making it untenable. Also, we hopped on this issue right in midstream. There was a lot of pressure on the chamber. Even some of its members, even some of the big companies in its membership had left the chamber over its opposition to climate legislation. And there were activist groups galore making it really ugly for them.
Okay, we don't have a lot of time left, but if I could ask really quick, what is your feeling on the future of Yes Men stunts? Because do you ever worry that, like with film posters and films and everything, that things will get so big that people will just decide one day that, you know, if something's this goofy, it must be the Yes Men and just dismiss it? Or are you?
Well, we've recently started this thing we're calling the Yes Lab, which is about helping activist groups, individuals, what have you, to do actions on their own. We got tired of people coming up to say up to us and saying, "Why don't you go after Monsanto?" or whatever. You know, we'd retort, "Well, you do it. It's not that hard." And we start publishing our tips and all that, how we do it. Now we actually have workshops, and we tell them very simple things like, don't worry about lawyers. Don't even talk to lawyers. Here's how you get into a conference if you want to do that. Here's how you can be funny. So, you know, other people now. There's a lot of people and a lot of faces that these places don't expect. And as whether this sort of thing will become old, I don't think so. I mean, this has been done for centuries. You know, people making fun of power using humor has been used for a really long time to good effect. Just 11 years ago, activists in Serbia toppled Milosevic, the dictator there, using a lot of these funny techniques, a lot of really crazy things they did. If you look that up, there are some really funny stories. It's a very powerful thing. And in Egypt, there was also a tremendous amount of humor used by the activists in all kinds of ways. It's just useful.
We're just about out of time. Bernie, I wanted to give you the last word. We haven't heard from you in a while. Anything from down in Philadelphia?
Well, I just want to say I'm a huge fan of the Yes Men, and I imagine anybody who listens to WBAI is, which I'm sure everybody listening is a fan of BBAI, BAI is a fan of the Yes Men, and Yes Men fans are a fan of WBAI's goals. They're very complimentary missions. I was laughing when you were talking about the Less Labs, that wondering if there's going to be a Yes Men corporate franchising opportunities, so we could start our own branches. But it's not really necessary. Anybody can do this, and that's the beauty of it. But I want to just sort of close out by encouraging our listeners who support this sort of activism with a great streak of humor to call 212-209-2950. Pledge support for WBAI, which publicizes and honors this sort of thing, and you're going to get some great gifts. They're a spoof of the New York Times, two of their movies, autographed. It's a great package for $75. 212-209-2950.
All right, we're pretty much out of time. I want to thank both you guys just for being here, for doing what you do. And
thanks to you, and thanks to BAI for giving us information.
There's a lot of magic. So rare. A lot of magic in this world that if we band together, we can do incredible things. And I'm looking forward to the Hope Conference when you guys will be keynoting and just the connection of worlds there. Yeah. And whatever comes this spring with Occupy Wall Street and all kinds of other fun things that are happening.
It's going to be fun.
Please keep those calls coming in, 212-209-2950. We'll be back next week with a regular program. And any Yes Men sites that you want to give out? Any contact info?
Oh, sure. YesLab.org is our newest thing. www.yeslab.org. And you can sign up, read, all our tips, how to do things. Mm-hmm. And join one of our Yes Labs. If you're in New York, at NYU, every Friday we do workshops. So just drop a line and say hi.
All right. Thanks, Andy Bickelbaum from the Yes Men. And thanks also to Mike Bonanno, who was with us from Scotland earlier. And we'll be, I'm sure, hearing more from you guys. Again, 212-209-2950. That's the number to call to pledge. We'll see you next week. Good night.
There comes a time when rock stars beg for cash, and that's how the world's supposed to come together as one. There are people dying, oh, and they just noticed, and they think they're the greatest.
Hi, this is Gil Scott here, an unknown bluesologist, speaking to you on Free Speech Radio, WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. Stay here.
It's WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial. Felipe Luciano here with you. This is what's called Cuban doo-wop. A group called Vocal Sampling, doing with their mouths what instruments normally do, and playing a very, very famous tune, Que Bueno Baila Usted by Benny Moré. Listen to what Cubans can do when they let their black really out. Porque el que rico, toca usted, y moré, te va a dar bien. the a cappella singing of vocal sampling, much deeper than Manhattan Transfer. Let's be honest about it. This is doo-wop Caribbean style, Afro-Cuban style. Felipe Luciano here with you on WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial. Today we are going to delve into, investigate, turn over, and dissect the African origins of Latin music. We are going to have Bobby Sanabria on. We're going to issue or work on and you're going to listen to a documentary, a radio documentary, that was put together by Joyce Jones of our station here, WBAI. Bobby Sanabria, as you know, is a phenomenal musician, a great teacher, teaches at the Manhattan School of Music, has always been about transmitting the joy, the importance, the nobility of this music, as well as of his people. Born in the Bronx, in the projects, like I was, became a drummer, a phenomenal drummer. And I've worked with him in poetry. He's very sensitive, very into subtlety and nuance, but loves to talk about Afro-Cuban jazz and how this jazz came. Spanish Harlem, of course, is the mother of not only salsa, but Latin jazz as well. I don't know how many of you understand this, and you may be saying, here he goes, especially some of the Latinos, here he goes with his black stuff again. He seems to always be caught up in that. Let me explain something to my family and to you, beloved. A people who do not know who they are permanently dysfunctional. A people who do not understand their nappy hair, their ashy skin, their broad lips, their wide noses, their big butts, when you don't understand where that comes from, you are in disillusion. You are in amnesia. You're in a state of cultural amnesia. And no matter what success you may come across, no matter what success you go through, no matter what success, you still have not understood who you are. Do you know less than 13% of Latinos in this country identify as black? Can you believe that with all the nappy hair you see in this country? I can't believe it. When given the option of being black or white, they inevitably, or any other thing, by the way, they inevitably say they want to be white. It's unbelievable. It's not only Puerto Ricans. There's something, it goes up right through South America. When you look at the percentages of black people, for example,